WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Forget Netflix and all your other true crime podcast faves. Now Elgin police are stepping up to the mic, and they want you to listen up. Because get this, the department is reopening decades-old cold cases that took place in the Northwest suburb. And not only are they working to solve the cases, they're documenting these efforts in a podcast. It's called Somebody Knows Something, and boy, are they letting us in on what really goes on behind the scenes of murder investigations. At the table, we had Elgin Police Department Chief Anna Lally, Detectives Christopher Hall and Andrew Houghton, and Sergeant Matt Vartanian. Our panel helped us understand what makes a case cold, how these investigations work, and we dug into how the podcast highlights personal stories of the victims and the loved ones they left behind. Now, Chief Lally created the Elgin Police Department's cold case unit back in May 2024, and this is not something that all police departments have. The chief started us off by explaining why she created this in the first place.
Very high level, quick. 2024, decided to start a cold case unit. It was something that I wanted to do for a very long time. And eventually, you know, I was able to, get the resources and what we need to establish that unit. And getting the right people in the unit. So first, you know, Andrew and Matt, and now Chris. So the core of why we do it, and most importantly, you know, why the podcast? Why are we using that avenue? Why are we using that sort of media to connect and engage with our community and beyond? It's for the families. It's truly to give a sense of peace. I've said many times, I can't say what closure is for someone because that's very relative and it's very personal. But what we can do at least is try to give a sense of peace and comfort, because if you had a loved one, and in particular with the Karen Sheepers case, 40 plus years where the question is in your mind, what happened? It would be absolutely maddening to not know the answer. And I think as law enforcement today, it's an obligation and responsibility that we put the time, dedicate the right effort, dedicate the right resources so that families can get a sense of peace. And so we truly are doing it for that. The awards and accolades and all that comes with that. That's just the extra. And, when you talk to, the detectives today, you're going to see that these are people who truly care. And so starting that unit was important that we do it the right way.
Were there that many cold cases to warrant the creation of a unit?
Absolutely.
Last year?
Yeah, so over 40 cold cases. It's some of these cases have been sitting for 40 years. And so timeliness,
goodness,
time is of the essence. And I think it's important that, you get the right people, so you can have the best technical police officer, so they know their job, they know how to interview, they know investigative skills and techniques. But if you are missing that human element, that empathy, the empathy that you show people, you miss the mark. And
right.
So getting the right people, and when you you talk to these guys, it's going to come through. Truly genuine. I have nothing but the success of that unit. It's not me, it's them.
Right?
I'm just there in the background, giving them what they need, supporting them, and then they just take it and run and have done a phenomenal job.
That's wonderful. And before we hear from the sergeant and the detectives, I need you to tell me, Anna, what exactly makes a case cold?
Yeah. So for us, it's anything past 3 years that we haven't really—
3 years.
3 years. For we have decided that's the mark. So 3 years. So any missing person, any homicide cases, sexual assault cases. So we're taking a look at all of those cases. And generally, you know, as time has gone, you know, gone on in policing, technology has changed. The ability to solve cases have changed. So a lot of the cases are, you know, 40 years. And you know, I remember as a sergeant in our detective division, which is when I started looking at these case files and thinking, somebody, like, what are we doing? Like, we need to look at this.
Right.
And there's families.
Let's revive these.
Yes. And when you open up a case file and you see one picture, a Polaroid, if people know what a Polaroid is.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Of course.
That's it. That's one picture. And now, you know, here are some detectives who are looking at that like, this is all I have to work. And this is all that I really have. And now, you know, when you go to a crime scene, there's so many. I think the CSI effect has absolutely made people believe.
I was just going to say that times have changed.
Oh, yeah.
And we,
things
the
don't
things
happen
that we see on television.
In 1 hour. And detectives don't show up always in their three-piece suits. And they're, right, like, they're coming in sweatshirts. And they're just like, let's go.
I want to watch an episode of CSI with you and have you sort of dispel all the myths. But Andrew, let's bring you in here. So less than a year after this unit's created, you start this podcast. Somebody Knows Something.
Yeah.
So tell me more about just the initial concept here. Anna says this is for the families.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that as you go through these cases, a lot of times you'll listen to stuff that's very sensationalized, is, you know, almost making your offenders kind of anti-heroes to some degree. We really want to avoid doing that. So we kind of took the tactic of looking at it from the family's perspective. Our first season, we had the family very, very involved. So we interviewed a lot of the members of the family. They came on the podcast with us. And I think that it does a couple things. So, like, number one, it builds a good relationship with us and them, because they're the ones that matter. We owe them the attempt to try to look at these cases, to close these cases for them. But it also helps us understand who the victim is better, because we weren't there. You know, I wasn't in Elgin in 1975 when these cases happened.
Right.
So being able to talk to them and get that background is helpful. And then I think when you listen to the podcast, it humanizes who that person is. I think when you listen to something, you want some sort of emotional connection to it. And we're able to get that by having the family be the ones that drive that for us about the victim of these different cases.
Yeah. So, you know, that phenomenon of true crime podcasts. Did any of that faze you, Matt, when you were stepping into this? And how would you say Somebody Knows Something is different?
Yeah. So I would say that all of us are true crime junkies. You know, we just come from that world. We're very analytical with our thinking and our thought processes. Andrew and I are both evidence technicians, you know, in our previous, you know, roles in the police department. So having that mindset of just kind of slowing down a little bit, of just being able to focus on that stuff. So, you know, one thing to kind of go off of what Andrew was saying is, you know, we have this incredible power and responsibility to be stewards of somebody's legacy or their, you know, their life, really. So being able to just kind of dig a little bit deeper and be very gentle and delicate with that to make sure that we're doing our due diligence. So when we looked at ours, you know, with starting Somebody Knows Something, it was, how do we kind of differentiate ourselves, you know? And we thought with Karen's case, there was no holdback information that we had. I mean, we really had no idea what happened to her.
Referring to Karen Sheepers, who Anna mentioned, and she's your focus for the first season of the pod.
Yes. Yeah. So what we were able to do with that is we were able to take that and put all the information out there about the case, and we were actually investigating it and then actually creating content with the podcast in real time and taking our listeners along on that approach. So for us, that was the differentiation for it. Was most true crime podcasts, they solve a case, they go back retroactive and they talk about how they solved it.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't us. Ours was, we're actively investigating it and we're putting out that content as we're moving.
That's
and
the
I think
piece.
That was that draw.
That's the piece for me. That was the draw, to know that you're actually working on this stuff. Chris, the day-to-day of being a detective working on a cold case, I imagine some slower days than others, right?
Yeah, it's really just a variety of different tasks throughout the day. It could be one day where...
And are you doing one case at a time, or do you have multiple that you're working at the same time?
So we're focusing right now on the 70s. The 70s in Elgin, we have 5 homicides, 1 missing persons case, one beginning in 1971 all the way up to 1979. Obviously, Andrew and I are producing and recording our podcast for season 2 at our local radio station, WRMN 1410, which is a few short blocks down the street. So a normal day could be, you know, we get in, get our coffee, and we're going to go down to the radio station and record our episode for the podcast. Then we're going to walk back to the station and pull open these case files.
Because you know I was going to ask you, how do you fit a podcast into all that would come with actively trying to solve a cold case from the 70s?
We wear a lot of hats in this unit. So
apparently.
And it's kind of just being thrown into the fire and see how it goes. And it's been a success so far. And I think it'll be a continued success as we expand the unit and keep working these cases. And every day is not the same for us. And I think I like that variety. Mm-hmm. So
Chris, you and Andrew are co-hosts of this second season, the one that's currently out. Mm-hmm. Andrew and Matt, you were our stars of the first season.
Yep.
Before Matt got his promotion to sergeant. So back to season one for a moment, and Karen Sheepers, Andrew, tell me more about her story, because a lot happened there. If you can sort of summarize, you had multiple theories and just the dive into the water. How do you get from point A to
So basically
point Z?
We opened up the case file and we said, hey, what we want to avoid doing is just saying, well, let's just look at one thing.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get this tunnel vision of, well, I think this happened or I think that happened. You just can't do that in investigations. I think if you watch a lot of true crime or you see things in the news, a lot of times where police get themselves in trouble is by doing that. So we looked at it and said, hey, we think there's a couple different things that could have happened to her. We're going to put them all on the table and we're going to give them all equal weight and we're just going to walk through it.
Mm.
So we looked at options of, you know, basically she went to a bar and then she disappeared in April of 1983. And we said, well, she could have taken off on her own. She could have been abducted. She could have been killed. She could have gone to her house. What are all the different options we have? And we just kind of walked through all those. One of those ultimately was bodies of water because her vehicle was missing.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at the idea of either A, she crashes her vehicle into a body of water and it's gone, or B, someone needs to get rid of her vehicle. What are you going to do? You're going to put it in water to hide the vehicle. So that was kind of where we ended up at the end of this, you know, entire case. But it was taking all those options and putting them all on the table and giving them equal weight.
Yes. You talked to people who were close to Karen, family, friends, colleagues. You also spoke with a friend, Denise, whose wedding Karen was supposed to take part in.
It was devastating. I mean, it's just so sad, you know. People said, well, are you going to replace her? You know, and I'm like, she can't be replaced. There's going to be an empty spot, you know. It was sad, and there was kind of, it just, you know, leaves a hole.
So one of the things that was revealed too is that Karen even had her dress ready for the wedding.
Yep.
And I don't remember if it was you or Matt, Andrew, that made the point of like, you know, that was the piece that kind of stuck with you of like, there's no way she would just up and take off. Like she was going to be looking forward to her best friend's wedding in August.
Yeah, she was one of two bridesmaids in her wedding.
Right.
And she had put down the deposit for the dress. You know, she had gone and tried on the dress. It just didn't make sense to, I think, either of us. You know, we're both married. Like, I can't imagine, you know, the maid of honor at my wife's wedding just deciding, like, I'm just going to take off, you know, a couple months before the wedding and not tell anybody. It just doesn't make logical sense. So we kind of felt like that was a big piece for us to know.
Yeah. In that eighth episode, The Dive, you worked with an Illinois-based search and recovery team, Chaos Divers. So Mike's one of the divers that you worked with. I want to play him describing Karen's car, which you found on the dive.
On this specific vehicle, it feels like all the windows are intact and up except for one. It's in the back or the back hatch. And I can still see yellow on the vehicle. All four wheels are still intact. All four wheels are still there. There's a few rust spots on the vehicle where it's rusted through. But all in all, the vehicle is in pretty good shape for being down there for 40-something years.
So tell me more about reactions that you're getting from family and friends, especially when you told them that you found Karen's car. That's huge, Matt.
Yeah. I'll be honest. It's still chilling to hear that. You know, it's still very surreal of how March 24th went down for us. You know, Andrew and I had an agreement that we wanted to fill in the family every day during that week with the dive. Karen's mom, Liz, is 90 and one of the most amazing people that I've ever met. we wanted to make sure that whatever information that we had, that we shared that with them. So we had a plan to go out and talk to them every day. So that first day after we had found the license plate, and Andrew and I, we had the license plate memorized. So when Mike came out of the water with the license plate, it was upside down, it was backwards, and you could still see we're kind of very giddy, you know, kind of like how I am right now, with just being like, hey, is XP8919, like that, we think that's her plate. And he came up with it, and we looked at it, and there was, I mean, just legitimate emotion on the boat.
Wow.
with Jacob and Lindsay and Mike. And when we were going out that day to fill in the family about what we had found, we found out later that Liz told the rest of the family that she knew what was going on. She's like, they found her. You know, she just knew, being a mother, you know, mm-hmm. having not known what had happened to her daughter for 42 years, she knew why we were coming out there. So I think that's just the power of the relationship. You know,
wow.
That was the bottom line with everything. You know, you have to be able to make sure that the family is taken care of, and you don't, we didn't want to open up old wounds. You know, if it's something where they didn't want to do that, we didn't want to do that at all.
So we travel now to season two. This is where you come in, Chris. You're working with Andrew on this one. How do you feel? Are you thinking, oh my God, big shoes to fill here?
Big shoes to fill.
After such a successful first season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Big shoes to fill, but learning a lot from my partner, Andrew. It's exciting. I show up every day with a willingness to, let's see what I can learn today. Let's see, you know, who I can not let down.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an optimism, I think, in both of our eyes. And we look at these case files, and I'm looking at certain things that maybe were overlooked, you know, mm-hmm. 40, 50 years ago. And it's just, I'm like, we're gonna run with this. We're going to run with this case. We're going to run with that case. And
I'm glad you mentioned that, because at some point in the beginning of that season, Andrew says, you know, that the two of you are working on these multiple cases outside mm-hmm. of the pod, and also say that, quote, some are not appropriate for this venue.
Correct.
So it made me curious, what do you think makes a case appropriate for somebody Know Something?
So, you know, Karen's case, it's a missing persons case. There's not a lot known. We're all a team. You know, we rely on the public's knowledge and information just as much as we rely upon our fellow officer. You know, we're all trying to figure out the same thing, what happened to Karen. Some of these other cases, these homicide cases, there's sensitive information that obviously we cannot divulge to the public
mm-hmm.
based on evidence, based on suspect knowledge. And essentially, when we put out an episode regarding a homicide, it's to elicit tips. It's to elicit that, you know, it's to jog someone's memory that lives 1,000 miles away. Oh, yeah, I lived in Elgin in 1975, and I remember exactly what happened that day because I listened to your podcast.
Right. So this is not just
name.
For Correct. Podcast ratings and getting the most listens.
Absolutely not. It's for to elicit tips. It's to jog someone's memory. It's to bring notice, not just to Elgin, but nationally. We're looking into this case. We haven't forgotten to the families,
yeah.
And we also haven't forgotten if you're the perpetrator that's out there. And I want that to be known.
Yeah, and if you go back, Anna, to when you first created this unit back last May, I mean, did you expect any of this to happen?
So, funny thing, yes, yes, and yes. I'm a very optimistic person. You know, when I create that unit, it's the right people. So, you know, talking to Andrew and Matt and then pitching to them, we're going to do a podcast, and they looked at me like, we're doing what? So
only imagine.
You got to be so. And I said, and I literally was like, "You'll be fine. You got. It's like it's not a big deal. You're going to do it, and there's nothing that you guys can't do." And you know, during that time, that week, where we were on the Fox River, and that I can't tell you and describe. I've been in law enforcement. I have 30 years in March, all at the Elgin Police Department.
Wow.
And
congrats.
So, thank you. And I can't describe to you the feeling that week in the community. In the department, you know, the personal side to things of meeting the family, you know, and I told Matt and Andrew, and I tell them, I said, your lives are going to change forever. I said, just wait for it, because the magnitude and impact of this, and, you know, I do say this is a once in a lifetime case.
Yeah.
I say that, but then I kind of want to take that back, because I think they're going to do it again, and they're going to do it again, and they're going to do it again. And that's just my mentality. It's like, we're going to do it. And, you know, I do my part, which is making sure that, you know, I have the resources, and, you know, I have an unbelievable city manager who, you know, supports what I do, an unbelievable council. Mm-hmm. And you need that, you know, from
that's
that.
Key.
That's absolutely key, so that they can do what they do. So yeah, I kind of, you know, I believe in them, and
yeah.
I believe in what we're doing. And I also believe in, you know, more importantly, you know, when you leave this career and you look back at your career, this has to mean something. You know, so all mm-hmm. these things that you do, good days, bad days, you know, whatever, this has to mean something. And for a family to say, I finally have peace, mm-hmm. you could have 20, 30 bad days, and knowing that, it yeah. erases all of that and then some.
And it's an added bonus to know that the podcast is resonating with listeners, right, Andrew? Because, I mean, it's been nominated for 2025 America's Greatest Detective Award by Law and Crime. That's a true crime and live trial network. I mean, yep. How does that type of recognition feel in addition to what you're doing for these families?
I think it's humbling, but I think most of all, I think the way we look at it is even doing media like this is really helpful for our cases. It's all coming full circle back to that. Mm-hmm. So when we go on media, when we get some sort of recognition, we can use that to try to push people back to our website. We can push people back to our cases to try to get information on those cases.
Yeah.
It's not making us famous. Like, we're not making millions of dollars on this podcast. You know, it's ad free. We're not getting any revenue from it. But the more people that listen, the more people that contact us, the better.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to remember who these people are. A lot of these season two cases, we're trying to highlight who the person was. We're talking to their family, make sure that people remember these people actually existed in our community and that they were killed in our community. And so
yeah.
the more listeners, the better is kind of our perspective.
Well, speaking of season two, so you're exploring, as Chris teased earlier, five homicide cases and a missing persons case from the 70s. Elgin back then was very different from the Elgin today. Let's listen to a sneak peek.
Elgin was a much smaller city in the 1970s. When you look at the actual crime rate per 100,000 residents and compare that from 1972 to the numbers we have from 2021, it's vastly different. In fact, the violent crime rate in Elgin in 1972 was almost 77% higher than it is today. That is a huge difference. And it creates unique challenges for law enforcement in the 1970s. The number of sworn officers back then is nowhere near the authorized 195 that we have today. So those officers and detectives were dealing with a much higher crime rate, more violent crime, and less officers.
So Chris, what should folks expect with this current season? Because you've structured it differently than the first one, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Covering multiple this time.
Correct. So season two, as we see it, it's each episode is going to highlight each of our cases from the 70s. Mm-hmm. Season two, episode two, just launched
Monday.
This Monday.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we launch each episode every other Monday. The next case will be 1976 murder, Lori Bulger.
Okay.
After that, it'd be...
We have a missing girl, Barbara Gluckert, from 1976, and then a gentleman named Casey Kyles, who was murdered in 1977, and then a woman named Renee Tovar, who was murdered in 1979.
Lots to cover in season two. Matt, if folks are interested in sharing tips about any of these cases, how do they do that?
Yeah, we have a tip line that they can call, 847-289-COLD, and we also have a cold case tip line that refresh my memory on, Andrew.
It's been a couple months. coldcasetips@elginil.gov. Yeah. And then we just launched a website, which is elgincoldcases.com.
Awesome.
Yep.
Elgin Police Department Chief Anna Lally, Detectives Christopher Hall and Andrew Houghton, and Sergeant Matt Vartanian, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Micah Yasin. It was edited by Maha Ahmed. For more conversations like this, check out our full catalog of interviews at wbez.org/reset. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again later today.